Whitney said, my name is Christine Kowalski. I'm the director of the VA Qualitative Methods Learning Collaborative. Just want to give brief apologies. We had some technical difficulties that the CIDR team did an amazing job to help us overcome. As always, they are phenomenal. So I appreciate all of you joining and hanging in there for a few minutes while we started late. And given that, I'm just going to jump right into introducing our speakers. I'm so excited about this session today. So the first presenter for today is Dr. Andrea Nevidal, who is an investigator and senior qualitative methodologist for the Ann Arbor HSR&D COINE. And she really is an expert on qualitative methodology. And she uses qualitative methods to elicit veteran provider and stakeholder perspectives on the socio-cultural and organizational facilitators and factors influencing healthcare delivery. And I also just wanted to mention that this year, she won the distinction of the best of D&I for the NIH and Academy Health 16th Annual Conference on Dissemination and Implementation in Health for this work in particular. So you all get this wonderful extra dive into that work. It'll actually, there'll be herself and Dr. Jackson will be presenting a little bit more detail than they were even able to do in D&I. So, and then I'd also like to introduce Dr. George Jackson. Due to the technical difficulties, he's not on video, but he's not there on Andrea's phone, a wonderful healthcare epidemiologist and implementation scientist with the Center of Innovation to Accelerate Discovery and Practice Transformation for the Durham VA. And additionally, he's a professor and director of the program on Implementation and Improvement Science at the University of Texas Southwestern Medical Center. Many of you probably know him. Among other projects, he's currently the corresponding PI for two VA query centers. So I'm just briefly going to frame this up. They're going to be talking about understanding pathways from implementation to sustainment. Many of you have probably heard me say over and over, implementation without sustainment is really not useful. And so we're very happy that they have the breadth that they have in this work, because the VA Health Administration in the United States is our largest learning healthcare system. And Dr. Nevidal and Dr. Jackson have been involved in the Diffusion of Excellence program, which is a large-scale model of diffusion that identifies and diffuses evidence-informed practices across VA. And so what's really exceptional, one of the exceptional things about this work, is that there's so much breadth, because they have taken a deep dive into 57 evidence-informed practices at 82 facilities. And like I said, when I sent this out, rarely do we see that type of breadth that we can draw conclusions from. So we're behind. I'm not going to take any more time other than to say, please, like Whitney said, type in your questions in Q&A at any time. We don't want you to forget them, and we'd like to have a nice discussion once the presenters are done. So thank you again so much for joining. And now I'm going to turn things over to Dr. Nevidal.
Thanks, Christine. Thanks, everyone. This is a really great opportunity for us to share some of our work, and we appreciate you joining us and bearing with us with some technical challenges this morning. And I just, before we kind of go into the main part of the presentation, I wanted to acknowledge that this work would not have been possible without our multi-site evaluation team, our partnership with the Diffusion of Excellence, and our long-term query funding. I also want to give us extra special thanks to Caitlin Reardon, Marilla Weiderquist, Laura Damschroeder, and Maria Arasim for their support in the longitudinal evaluation that I'll be talking about today. It wouldn't have been possible without them. We also have just some acknowledgments and disclosures as usual. I have the reference here for the paper that is under review, but hopefully, fingers crossed, it will be accepted soon. And I have the reference there. And then to begin, I just wanted to go over our basic objective for today, and then I'll hand it over to George. So today's presentation, we have two main objectives. First, George will provide a background information on our larger partnered evaluation of the Diffusion of Excellence, what the Diffusion of Excellence is, and how we aim to understand the impact of learning health system infrastructure. The second objective, where I'll come into play and present, is I will focus more in depth on an aspect of our evaluation, which is to understand the longitudinal pathways of the Diffusion of Excellence's diverse evidence-informed practices as they transition from initial implementation to long-term sustainment. So, George, go ahead and present.
Sounds good. So I apologize for the technical difficulties. This is one, of course, the realities of implementation that we all know well. In late 2015, there was a recognition in the VA that while on average the quality of care meets or exceeds that of the private sector, there was not always completely even quality across the system. And the need to make sure that no matter where every veteran goes, they have access to the latest and best of healthcare led the VHA under where the leadership of then White House Fellow Sharif Al-Dahal, now of course our Undersecretary for Health, to develop to the Diffusion of Excellence program. A key implementation strategy in that program has been a VHA Shark Tank, which has gone on essentially yearly since 2016. In this Shark Tank, like, VA employees submit potential promising practices that were developed in the VA and really developed at the front lines and had been shown to be effective in one or more VA centers. They applied and have their applications reviewed by subject matter experts. And about, usually most years, about 20 finalists submit their present their practices to SHARCs, who are medical center and visit directors, who are bidding resources to get help in implementing and replicating these practices in their own VA medical center. And those winning practices are called DOE promising practices. Next slide. This leads to about 6 to 9 months of facilitated implementation and replication. So there are a limited number of implementing fellow sites, usually 1 to 3, and they go to an in-person meeting to start developing their implementation plans and receive ongoing facilitation from both the person that developed the promising practice as well as experts in implementation and get help both planning out that process and sort of troubleshooting, but also developing new tools in the implementation process. At the end of that time, those practices are either designated as national diffusion practices that get support from staff from Diffusion of Excellence. Some teams are invited to join a VA Diffusion Academy where they get additional training in the process of replicating their promising practices, and others have their information packaged for organic diffusion. In other words, they get a toolkit and it's placed on the VHA Diffusion Marketplace, which I'll show in a second. The next slide. We just want to give an example of a promising practice. In this practice called STRIDE, which was developed out of the Durham VA, is the result of a quality improvement initiative funded by the Office of Geriatrics and Extended Care, in which they realized that early ambulation in the hospital led to patients being more likely to be discharged from to home. They had a day shorter time in the hospital, and the STRIDE patients felt better. So this is a program that was named a DOE promising practice, as well as has been supported by Query through the Function Query program. They've been replicated at this point in about 65 facilities around the country. This is just one of the 98 of promising practices that have won Shark Tank. Next slide. Early on in this process, it was realized that it was important to do an independent evaluation of the entire sort of Shark Tank process. Sort of the question of what is the impact of the program as a whole? So we through a competitive application process, the teams came together to look at questions around how to encourage meaningful engagement, how leaders choose practices, sort of what influences implementation success, and then what Andrew will be talking about today, really what influences both spread and sustainment of practices. So this is a mixed methods evaluation based on the Consolidated Framework for Implementation Research, Weiner's theory for our organizational readiness for change, and Rogers' diffusion of innovation. So we often organize these within within thinking about the outcomes within VA. Next slide. One important thing about this evaluation is it is not focused solely on what is the impact of a given practice, like STRIDE. Those are really important questions in query, and the Fusion Excellence have funded some really important evaluations of individual nationally diffused projects. But what we're talking about today is that impact of the program. What are the structures and processes necessary to encourage a learning health system across the VA? So I just wanted to put that in a little bit of context. Next slide. We'll go into data collection in detail, but just to sort of give you an idea of this really long term, this has been ongoing since 2017. We've done a lot of work analyzing trends and practices and factors, sort of macro organizational factors associated with their replication and spread. We've done a lot of semi-structured qualitative interviews with more than 200 people. That's a key piece of what Andrea will talk about today. Structured observations at various events, as well as a lot of surveys of the sharks, of the participants, trying to understand their satisfaction and their experience with the program. The next slide. This slide just gives you an idea. There have been and more than 3,600 applications to the VA Shark Tank over the course of the various tanks, and resulting in 98 promising practices. The point is there's been a lot of participation. 140 of the 141 VHA parent facilities have had somebody submit an application to the Shark Tank. And about two-thirds of the parent facilities have had their directors participate or other senior officials participate as sharks. Next slide. We just want to give you an idea of where the evaluation sort of fits in. This is very much an embedded evaluation that walks alongside Fusion of Excellence. For example, one of the big questions around how do you help facilities make adoption decisions led to our colleagues at Bedford are developing a quick view and a process of these participants putting out what is their ideal bid for getting resources. We were noticing those weren't always lining up. The decisions process could be enhanced. And so while we don't know an official causal effect, we know that these efforts have been associated with enhancements of the quality of the information that's been provided to in the bid process. So this is again a very practical evaluation. Next slide, please. You should see the front page of the VHA Diffusion Marketplace, and really want to encourage you to go there. There are both Diffusion of Excellence winners, as well as participants in some of the sister programs, such as the VHA Innovators Network. There's query practices on there, so you can search out what are really great innovations that are going on in the VA. And currently about 66 of those 98 initial practices winners are being monitored through the Diffusion Marketplace. Those that aren't often are the result of they may have been merged with another program that was going on. It was sort of made sense to do that. There have been almost 1,900 instances of full or partial adoption of these practices across the VA. And it's the end of 2022. At the time, those 13 national diffusion practices had been adopted at that point of almost 1,000 times and impacted almost 1 million veterans. As I finish up, I just want to sort of give you an idea of the things that have come out of this project. I mentioned the importance of sharks needing more details about the project, and that led to the quick view and the wish list. There's a need for clarification around individual roles. So what are the individual roles in Diffusion of Excellence? And that could be put out to what are people's roles in learning health systems. So that led to enhanced training and early interaction with participants. The need to align resources and leadership support. So it led to participation agreements. It had to be clear what those sharks meant when they were doing their bids, for example. Noting that persistence matters, and this is an area where that Andrew will talk about today. Persistence, you may not finish things in those 6 to 9 months, but persistence can often lead you to implementation. About a half of practices that have responded currently, and that's across all shark tanks, are still ongoing. Those are folks that receive that facilitated replication as an indication of sustainment. And I've mentioned the fact that there's a big push to impact the diffusion marketplace. So I'll hand it back over to Andrea as she talks about what we've learned about the life cycle of these interventions.
Thanks, George. So now that George has provided a great background to the diffusion of excellence in the shark query, I'd like to shift our focus to the second objective. So for this next part of the presentation, I wanted to focus on the longitudinal pathways of diverse evidence-informed practices, or DOE promising practices, as they transition from initial implementation to long-term sustainment within the Veterans Health Administration. And George, feel free to chime in if there's anything you want to add as I go along. So I'd like to begin by providing a basic background on sustainment, which is the extent to which a practice is in use after implementation. It is well known, as Christine had mentioned earlier, that many evidence-informed innovations are not implemented in a timely manner. And to add to this challenge, even when innovations are implemented, over half of innovations fail to be sustained over time. Studying sustainment, especially over the long term, is challenging for a wide range of reasons due to limited funding cycles, shortened timelines, difficulty engaging participants over time, and pragmatic methods for measuring sustainment are still very much in development. And though there's been less attention to studying sustainment, it has long been thought that initial implementation milestones often predict sustainment. However, in our prior and earlier work, we found that initial sustainment can still be achieved despite initial implementation failures. So for example, some sites needed a little bit more time to overcome barriers to successfully implement and initially sustain their practice. George has already described the basic process for the Diffusion of Excellence Shark Tank competition. He did that earlier. And so here I just wanted to point out that after the Shark Tank competition and people have implemented their practice, the key question for this part of our evaluation is what happens after implementation? Do people continue to sustain their practice or do they stop sustaining? So hopefully I'll shed some light on that today. This map displays gold stars to show each of the 82 implementing facilities with promising practices from cohorts 1 through 5 of the Diffusion of Excellence Shark Tank. That's what this portion of the evaluation is focused on. These are facilities that were included in this longitudinal evaluation. So during cohorts 1 through 5, there were 57 promising practices that were implemented by 82 leads at their facility. Some practices were implemented at more than one site. This slide just provides 3 examples of practices that were implemented by diverse leads in diverse VA employees leading implementation at their facility. The practices ranged, and there were 3 types of practices. There were staff interventions, clinical interventions, and process improvement. And I wanted to just point out 3 different examples from the 3 different types. So here we have a practice called Dedicated Environmental Services Training Specialist, which was led by a housekeeping aide. We have Advanced Comprehensive Diabetes Care, which is led by a nurse, and SharePoint Construction Safety, which is led by an engineer. So from 2016 to 2021, we conducted an exploratory sequential mixed methods longitudinal evaluation that included the 82 implementation leads representing their facility and the 57 promising practices across the 5 cohorts 1 through 5 SHARP Tank. Interviews were conduced shortly after the 6 to 9 month facilitated support period. And here we really just wanted to understand implementation experiences and outcomes. We also conducted pragmatic surveys about annually after implementation, and these were used to understand sustainment experiences and outcomes. And when I say pragmatic, what I mean is that we mean generic enough to use across 57 diverse practices, easy to understand across 82 different types of participants, in focused questions so they wouldn't be too burdensome for participants to complete over time. And secondary outcomes were also included in our evaluation, but it's not the primary focus of the talk today. And those included sustainability, which is an anticipated outcome, so whether or not people anticipated in the future that the practice would be sustained. And then we also included some questions in the survey about effectiveness and institutionalization. So for our data analysis for this longitudinal evaluation, we used directed content analysis for qualitative data from interviews and surveys. We use descriptive statistics for the quantitative data. And here I've highlighted just two of the key outcome questions that are the focus of this talk today. So the first one is based on our implementation outcome, which is the question included in the interview. On a scale from 1 to 10, where 1 is unsuccessful and 10 is successful, how would you rate your site in implementing this practice and why? So they were able to contextualize the why they were able to do what they did. We also included a sustainment outcome question, which is, what is the current status of your practice? And this was a multiple choice question. And then it was followed up with, why is your practice in this current status? We adapted Hal Merriam et al.'s list of sustainment factors, which were identified from their systematic review, to help organize our sustainment data to understand sort of the better the determinants of sustainment. And then once we had the outcomes for each facility, we were able to characterize their pathway over time. So we looked at each outcome over time to see if they were similar or different. And so we categorized them into a linear pathway, which means the same type of outcome over time, or a nonlinear pathway, which means that there's some type of change or fluctuation over time. So what did we learn about pathways over time? Approximately 5 years post-implementation, we identified 3 sustainment pathways. The pathways included those with the following types of outcomes as of 2021. So fully sustained, not fully sustained, and missing as of 2021. And each main outcome represented about 1/3 of the 82 facility leads. Approximately 1/3 of leads reported that their practice was fully sustained because it was in use and in place as of 2021. Approximately 1/3 of leads reported that their practice was not fully sustained as of 2021, and the group of the not fully sustained included 2 subgroups. Half of these were in a liminal state, which means that their practice was neither sustained nor was it discontinued because there was some type of a temporary pause or they were partially sustaining some elements or components of the practice. The other half of those that were not fully sustained reported that their practice was permanently discontinued because the practice was no longer in use at the facility. The remaining 1/3 of the 82 facility leads were missing their most recent outcome in 2021. In addition to knowing the recent sustainment outcome, as I mentioned earlier, we studied the pathways over time, and these were either linear or nonlinear. A linear pathway is indicated by the straight lines here in the figure. And that means that they've reported the same outcomes over time. So for example, they had continuously been successful with implementation, which is indicated by the straight green line. They had been continuously not fully successful, which is indicated by the orange and blue straight line. Or they were continuously missing, which is indicated by the purple straight line. The linear path is what is often expected and emphasized in the literature to date. People often assume that the way people start off will predict their future status. However, we also found that there were nonlinear pathways, which is indicated by the wavy lines in the figure, and I'll talk more about that in a bit. A nonlinear pathway means that the outcomes differed, fluctuated, or changed in some way. So for example, a facility lead might report that they started off with successful implementation or sustainment, but then they were no longer sustaining at some point in time. Or they started off with unsuccessful implementation or sustainment, but then their status changed at some point in time. And this finding is different than what people have typically thought about implementation and sustainment. This figure shows the outcome pathways over time for all 82 implementing facilities. The key takeaway here is that more facility leads, 70%, reported nonlinear pathways. The nonlinear pathways in the figure here are the wavy lines indicating changing outcomes over time from implementation to sustainment. And also where the lines start to change color also indicates where there's been some type of a change in their outcome. Fewer facility leads reported linear pathways over time, indicating the straight line. This next figure here shows that the facility leads who reported that their practice was sustained over the long term as of 2021. This is shown in the green area inside of the circle for the 2021 outcomes. You can see it's just like a straight bar of all green for their outcome of 2021. And among those that sustained, you may wonder, have they always been sustaining or do they experience some challenges? What we found is that more, 66%, had a linear pathway from implementation to longer term sustainment, which is that straight green line. So it means that they were continuously successful. We found that fewer of those who sustained, 34% of those that sustained, reported a nonlinear pathway over time. So that's where the wavy lines towards the bottom come into play here, showing that there was some type of a change or a barrier or a missing status over time. Here I just wanted to point out just an example of some of the qualitative data that we had over time for the pathways. So here's one example of a facility lead with a nonlinear or changing pathway to sustainment for their practice. As you can see here in 2016 in the orange box, that the lead had reported that they had only partially implemented their practice due to a barrier involving an inadequate element of the practice. However, when we followed up in subsequent years in 2019, 20, and 21, they reported that their practice was implemented with some extra time and that they sustained at multiple time points. And when we asked about in the future what they expected, they had anticipated that their practice would be sustained in the future. This next figure illustrates the pathways for facility leads that were not able to fully sustain their practice as of 2021. So among the 37% of facility leads who were unable to achieve long-term sustainment, most, 83%, had reported a nonlinear pathway. It's shown here in the figure, again, with the wavy lines and changing colors, which illustrate changing outcomes over time, and in some cases, indicating some prior success. So the areas in green show where they were previously successful. So among the facilities that did not fully sustain their practice, 50% of the leads were in a liminal state of sustainment because they were neither sustained nor discontinued. And this is the yellow and orange area inside of the circle, the liminal state here. The other 50%, indicated in the gray area here inside the circle, reported that their practice was permanently discontinued and no longer in use at their facility. Here's an example of a facility lead who reported a nonlinear pathway for their not fully sustained practice. Their practice was not fully sustained because it was in a liminal state at different points in time. The facility lead reported some challenges in 2018 with implementation involving some technology permissions but they were able to go on to successfully implement their practice. But then they later reported challenges with sustainment in the follow-up in 2019. They were in the liminal state. Then when we followed up in 2021, they said that they were able to overcome some barriers and they were sustaining. But then when we followed up in 2021, they mentioned they were back to that liminal state of partially sustaining. When we asked them about what their future, you know, what they expected, they anticipated that they would not sustain their practice due to some ongoing software issues. So here's just an example of what a pathway might look like for someone that has gone through different fluctuations and that they were not currently sustaining their practice fully. This next figure illustrates facility leads with missing outcomes as of 2021, the blue area inside of the circle. So all of these didn't respond and didn't have their most recent outcome. We were really interested in knowing pathways or history prior to the recent missing outcome. And we wondered if people were currently missing, were they missing because they just were not engaged, that they were struggling and not successful? But what we found is that although these facility leads were missing their 2021 outcome, 69% of these leads described their last known status as having implemented or sustained their practice, indicated in the green boxes prior to the blue area for the outcome of 2021. So now that I've shown you the different pathways over time, I wanted to spend some time about what are some of the factors that might be facilitating or hindering sustainment. And you might be wondering, what are these? So as expected, facility leads with sustained practices reported more facilitators, which are indicated in the green circle, and more positive secondary outcomes than those that did not fully sustain. These factors, just as a reminder, were identified from the open-ended survey text responses. The key facilitating factors to long-term sustainment included practice effectiveness and benefit, organizational leadership support, appropriate workforce, practice adaptation and alignment of the practice to the local context. These factors are based on what Hellmerium et al. Identified in their systematic review of sustainment factors, and we were able to map those to the qualitative text responses. And for those that did not sustain, as expected, they reported fewer facilitators overall. And those with practices in a liminal state of sustainment reported having a practice champion or sustained attention to topic or priority. So even though they were struggling, they still mentioned some facilitators. And surprisingly, sustained attention to topic and priority was also mentioned despite a practice being discontinued permanently, which means that even though a practice was discontinued for a particular site, it means that some elements of the practice may still be in use in some way, even though the actual practice was no longer in use. You may be wondering, what are some of the key factors hindering sustainment? As expected, facility leads with practices that were not fully sustained reported more barriers than those that had fully sustained. This slide highlights similarities and differences between the top barriers reported by facility leads that were not fully sustained in the orange circle and those that were fully sustained in the green circle, is really the area of overlap here. The key barriers to long-term sustainment included insufficient workforce, critical incidents due to the COVID-19 pandemic, unable to maintain fidelity to the practice, leadership did not support sustainment, and no ongoing support. Lack of trained personnel and practice benefit and effectiveness was not observed. And although those with sustained practices reported fewer barriers overall, facility leads also mentioned some potential barriers that they anticipated might affect sustainment in the future. And those were insufficient workforce and critical incidents. And the critical incident due to the pandemic is a factor that we had added that was not in the initial systematic review. You may be wondering, you know, are there any differences between those that did not fully sustain, those that were in the liminal state versus those that were discontinued permanently? So here I have the hindering factors and showing the differences. The areas of overlap show that there was that unable to maintain fidelity, insufficient workforce, and leadership did not support sustainment and critical incidents due to the pandemic. That those are the areas of the overlap between the liminal state and those that had discontinued their practice permanently. This figure also illustrates areas of difference among those that were not fully sustained. So those that were in a liminal state reported additional barriers such as no ongoing support, lack of trained personnel, practice benefit and effectiveness was not observed, and the champion did not support sustainment. Those that were discontinued had reported a different type of barrier, which was system or policy change. So to wrap up here, so we have some time for questions, I just have a few slides here about what are some different lessons that we learned from this longitudinal evaluation. So by studying the implementation and sustainment outcomes over time for each facility that implemented a promising practice, we learned that, surprisingly, fewer people reported a linear pathway or the same outcomes over time, which is often what most people expect, and that's illustrated by the straight lines in the figure. In contrast, we found that pathways from early implementation to long-term sustainment were often nonlinear, changing over time, which is indicated by the wavy line. As a result, when thinking about sustainment, don't make all long-term decisions on initial outcome, because initial failure does not always mean long-term failure. Initial success does not always mean long-term success. 72% of those with a non-linear path to not fully sustaining have successful implementation. Don't give up on people who haven't met their initial milestone. We found that 34% of facilities with long-term sustainment had a non-linear pathway and were able to overcome barriers that they experienced. Don't assume that missing data means lack of sustainment. We found that 64% of those with missing data had reported prior success. And overall, those with nonlinear pathways had poorer outcomes. Another key lesson from our longitudinal evaluation is that sustainment isn't binary. We found that 18% of facility leads reported that they were in a liminal state of sustainment because they were neither sustained nor were they discontinued. These sites had partially sustained an element of their practice or were temporarily paused. The liminal state offers a more nuanced understanding of sustainment and highlights when people might be on the cusp of sustainment or discontinuation. The liminal state provides an opportunity for intervention, and we think is something, an area for further study of strategies, ways that we can better support those that are in the liminal state and on the cusp. For program lessons, we have some additional thoughts about that as well. So our evaluation findings suggest that the diffusion of excellence is a promising model of diffusion and suggests return on investment given the higher rates of sustainment than what's typically reported in the literature. In considering our findings, the diffusion of excellence could reconsider only selecting practices for scale-up and national diffusion based on initial success, and the program could be better adapted to support those during sustainment, especially those in the liminal state that may need some support. We also have some key lessons learned about regarding long-term field engagement with participants, which is crucial when studying sustainment over the long term. So don't make assumptions based on initial results or missing status. In other words, don't focus all of your engagement efforts on those with initial success and limit engagement with those who fail to meet milestones. And don't assume those with missing data have failed. Pragmatic surveys were essential in measuring sustainment across 57 diverse practices, 82 diverse facility leads, and helped reduce participant burden over time. Instant messaging helped us to improve our survey response rates over time when participants were unresponsive to email recruitment letters. And having a robust partnership with our operational partners helped us to engage with participants over time. Our partners helped to get the message out for us about our surveys and provided input about the best times to administer our survey. And lastly, we just wanted to point out and highlight some key survey lessons that we learned. Open-ended text boxes really helped us to adapt our survey questions and outcome response options over time. The open-ended text responses helped us to better contextualize sustainment determinants in a pragmatic way, rather than having to have long lists of closed-ended questions. The open-ended text boxes also helped us to enhance what was already identified in the Halmerium et al. Sustainment factors. We identified two additional factors, one related to critical incidents due to the COVID pandemic and sustained attention to topic or priority, which wasn't found in the systematic review. In addition, open-ended text boxes also highlighted the important need for more in-depth qualitative insight on sustainment context and factors, which we hope to do more of in the future. Thank you so much for this opportunity. And feel free to reach out to us if you have any questions.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Dr. Navidal and Dr. Jackson. All of you know, if you join my other collaboratives, and I'm a very effusive person in general, but this work is just so exciting. And so I'm just going to do some brief conclusions and framing from my perspective. And then, as always, I appreciate the audience being so engaged. We have some phenomenal questions that we'll go through. So just as a reminder, what's truly exceptional about this VHA being the largest healthcare system in the United States, VA deserves tremendous kudos for implementing this program, where they've been able to do this since 2017. As George said, almost 1,900 practices affecting 1 million veterans, and about half of those have been sustained. That's incredible. So please do take time to go check out that website, the VHA Diffusions Marketplace, because they're always looking for more practices. And I think that this is just an ingenious idea that VA had to implement this, and that there's wonderful people like our presenters today and their entire team looking at this in so much depth so that we can draw conclusions from it. The last general comment I kind of want to make, because there's a few questions about the types of the practices and how can you draw conclusions across practices. And I agree, but the good thing about this is, to a certain extent, we have to be able to be a little bit content agnostic and take a step back to be able to draw these types of conclusions. Otherwise, as a field, we're constantly in this quagmire where we're never able to make an extrapolated conclusion. And so I think because of the amount of data they have, this is just so unique that they're able to offer this perspective to us. I really, truly enjoyed, and again, it was highlighted in D&I, and I think very novel, this idea of the kind of linear and nonlinear state. And I think that's also a truly wonderful conclusion for the field, So I just want to state it again, because I think it's so impactful. I think a lot of times in implementation, you know, we've all said like early adopters, laggard sites, we very quickly categorize people in this way and essentially maybe write them off. And so here we have data to show us it's really important for the field that initial failure does not always equal long-term failure. Likewise, initial success does not always equal long-term success. So to be able to go through and kind of map out, and I love those slides, Andrea, that they were able to add that we didn't see a D&I. I'm going to go back and look at those in a lot more in depth, where you kind of mapped out some of the different factors or constructs that influence those different levels. That this is just so exciting. I cannot wait to read a paper about it. And so I appreciate this work. It's very, very inspiring. And now I'm going to step through a couple of the questions that we have from our very engaged audience. And so I'm just going to give a shout out to Dr. Melanie Barwick, who's on, because she's presented for us several times before, and she has some great questions in here, does some wonderful work herself. And so for Andrea and George, her question is, does the VA have a way to track innovation complexity of those that have been disseminated? Do they have multiple core components in general that are simpler? For example, something you might consider more of a plug and play type innovation, if you could speak to that.
I just want to just check me. George, are you still on the call?
Yes.
Okay, did you want to take that one or do you want me to?
You can start now, Ed.
Okay, so if I'm understanding the question right, is that, and I didn't talk about this as much today because I was just really talking about like sort of like what their outcomes were, but we have, you know, different types of practices, and I do think that there are different levels of complexity based on whether it was like a process improvement, a staff intervention, or a patient-focused intervention. So I don't think that they will all necessarily have the same levels of complexity at all. And we talk about this a little bit more in the paper as well. Some had virtual components, some didn't. Some made it easier, you know, sometimes like there were practices that were easier to use during the pandemic because they had the virtual component or ability to adapt to have a virtual component, where others didn't, so they stopped. So I would say that, sure, there may be some that are more plug and play, but I would say that there is a range of complexity of practices that were involved. And that's why some practices needed some additional time too. So that 6 to 9 month period of facilitated support, some people, there were things that they didn't have in place yet, and they were persistent and able to overcome those barriers to implement. Sorry, George, I think you were going to say something.
This relates to the point that Christine, you're making as well about the fact that this is why it's both important to understand the overall process across types of interventions, and that's really the purpose of the SHARC evaluation. Sort of, this gets to sort of what is a learning health system, what are key components and considerations for a learning healthcare system as a whole. At the same time, we do need, and we said that there have been other evaluations that certainly dig deep into what are often complex interventions, some being more complex than others. But it takes both types of evidence, because what we're really focused on here in these different states are, as a whole, if we're going to have a learning healthcare system infrastructure, what are the considerations that we need to have? And I think that these different pathways sort of show some of that as people are thinking about what actually gets spread across the organization.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. I'm going to ask this question from Ariel, who I know that Andrea knows. One of the figures stated fully implemented / sustained. I think this is a good question, just so people really understand. Are those terms in your work considered synonymous, or were they operationalized and measured differently and combined into the numbers that you showed in the figure? So I guess, and I know that's really complicated, but just if you could generally talk about how you came up with like kind of a metric for that, whether it was sustained or fully implement, whether you considered that the same thing.
So yeah, I'm trying to remember. I go back and look at the figures, but yeah, the implemented part was, and we had that measure, it was shortly after that 6 to 9 month facilitated period. And so that was based on the qualitative interviews that we did. And so that was a different measure.
What we found is that when we decided, so a lot of this was, we developed over time, but initially when I became involved in this evaluation, I didn't know it was going to be this very long-term evaluation. I didn't know that we were going to have the opportunity to even study sustainment. So in hindsight, we might do things differently, but I guess my point is that, so the implementation outcome was measured from the interview, but then when we realized we could study sustainment, we included an implementation question, a follow-up for those that did not fully implement. So we had a survey question that followed up on that for those that did not fully implement. And then the survey data really focused on sustainment outcomes at those three different periods of 2019, 2020, and 2021. So hopefully that helps to explain the differences there. And the figures, which we have in the paper, we have some footnotes there about some things that we had to do so that the figure would make sense across the different cohorts over time.
Wonderful. Thank you. So all the questions are great. I think this is a really good question too. And I do very much agree with this. So the question is, for some sites and or some practices, discontinuation may actually be an appropriate outcome. And I think that's true and shouldn't be understated. Sometimes, obviously, we do de-implementation and that might be different, but sometimes there may be a valid reason. So do you have a sense of whether that could have been the case for any of your sites that discontinued? Or have you thought about that in any way that, you know, at times discontinuation may be actually an appropriate outcome for that particular site at that particular point in time?
Yeah, no, that's an excellent question and point. And we talk about that in the paper. I felt like for the presentation, there's only like so much I can talk about. But absolutely, that's one of the things that we learned from this is that sometimes it does not make sense to continue using a practice. And sometimes even if a practice is no longer used, there's like that attention to the topic or priority that's still kind of that become almost integrated into the healthcare system, even though that initial practice is no longer formally used. So definitely there are cases where it's appropriate to discontinue, and it doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad outcome. It's an appropriate outcome. If it doesn't show benefit, you know, if there isn't a need for the practice anymore, then it shouldn't be sustained. That's kind of, you know, there'd be sort of a waste of resources and time to be focusing on something that isn't beneficial to the healthcare system anymore. And sometimes they're replaced by other practices. Sorry, go ahead, George.
Just to give you a concrete example, there was a wonderful project out of the Bird Shark Tank, which was a flu shot icon on a desktop. It was out of Boston. It ended up being widely used in the VA, well over 60 facilities, I believe, early on. But then new technology came along. The Leaf Portal was used, but the attention that was paid at those facilities that used the icon, they simply used new technology. So that's sort of to give you a concrete example of that. It was really important that the practice was there, but it's got taken up with other new technology.
Yeah, excellent. Thank you so much for that example. One clarifying question that I think we can answer really quickly, and then one more and we'll wrap up. But I just want to make sure that this point is perfectly clear for the attendees, because the question was, is the liminal state a precursor to non-sustainment? Do some go on to full sustainment? And I think that you were trying to very clearly say liminal state is not always a precursor to non-sustainment. I just want to give you a chance to quickly respond to that so that there's no confusion there. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. What I wanted to point out in the figure really is that people often think of sustainment as like all or nothing. You're either sustaining or you're not doing anything. And what we found, and partially because of the qualitative responses in the survey, is that people said that they were in this in-between state where it's like they weren't doing either, but they weren't at the point that they were going to stop completely.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And so this is, I think, the last question we'll take. This is a great question, too. I think it was from Hildy. Thank you, Hildy. So the question is, you stated that DOE was established to address the issue of varied quality across VA facilities. It seems to be mainly a voluntary program where employees submit practices, directors bid and agree to implement. So it's possible that facilities most interested in improvement and innovation may be more likely to take part. I'm not sure if that's true or not, but how are promising practices promoted to sites that may be most in need of a practice or QI, if you could speak to that.
George, you want to take that one and maybe tell them kind of like where we're at with that?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So for major practices, those that get sort of national diffusion, their staff that works from diffusion of excellence, as well as with appropriate program offices, to make sure that facilities are aware of the practices. So that's a very, so there'll be, you know, examples include, maybe you may have heard of, include the Bione program to address the potential to reduce the number of medications that patients are on, for example. Certainly facilities that have been a little bit larger have been a little more likely to participate in some aspects of the program. So there's a push to really understand how to more fully engage those sites that may have opportunities to continue to be part of innovation programs. And the third part is that the diffusion of excellence is one part of a much broader VHA innovation ecosystem. It's part of the Office of Healthcare Information and Learning that are working on these sorts of projects. But you're absolutely right. I mean, there's a lot of current interest in understanding how to continue to expand participation across innovation ecosystem programs.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And I'm just receiving a lot of comments in the Q&A saying thank you so much for an amazing presentation. People have really enjoyed it. The audience was clearly so engaged. And like I said, this is really very inspiring work. I'm so appreciative that you presented in more detail, and we'll look for the paper. And I appreciate both of you taking the time to prepare for and present this today. And do either of you want to make any remarks right before we close out?
Thank you very much for the opportunity, and I'm so glad that it worked out, even though there were some little hiccups in the beginning. So thanks.
Thank you, and thank you for we also encourage you to engage with Office of Healthcare Information and Learning, as well as obviously Query and others, as you think about opportunities to understand further this process of the life cycle of innovations.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Life cycle innovations is incredibly important. So thank you. Thank you to presenters. This was amazing. And Whitney has just a brief survey that we'll close out with. And we will have another session next month and hope to see all of you then.
Thank you to our presenters. Thank you, Christine. To our attendees, when I close out the meeting, you'll be prompted with a feedback form. Please take a few moments to complete the form. We really do appreciate and count on your feedback to continue to deliver high-quality cyber seminars. Thank you, everyone, for joining us for today's HSR cyber seminar, and we look forward to seeing you at a future session. Have a great day, everyone. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone. Take care.